Hello, weebs of all walks. It's your boy Byron D0, and I want to make a dedication on this episode. This episode is dedicated to a dear friend of mine who just passed back in March, James Mandeville, aka Fedora. He was one of my oldest convention buddies, and very recently, back in March, he passed in his home in New Hampshire. No details were mentioned as to his passing, but that's not what I'm here to discuss. The guy was super selfless. He was one of the most generous souls I ever met. If he knew you, and if he had any faith in you, he'd give you a chance. And because of him, I fell in love with one of my favorite anime franchises, Lupin the Third. He also ran a non-profit called Operation Hammond. So, in addition to the usual links for this episode, I will have a link to his charity, non-profit, Operation Hammond. They run primarily on donations. So, when you download this episode on the Podomatic site, please feel free to check it out. They do first aid and first response work for various conventions on the East Coast. It's a really great site. They're always looking for volunteers if you can't afford to make a monetary donation. It hurts to talk about this, but I love this dude like a brother, and I just want to share his work. I want to do everything I can to help promote it. Well, other than that, enjoy the episode. Ja, matana.
Good afternoon, weaves of all walks. This is Byron D0, and you are listening to the Weeb Trash Can Podcast.
It's your birthday episode.
Yes, my birthday
picked
episode.
Yeah.
That means I pick whatever topic I want to go on forever and ever about. And since this was my anime gateway drug, I'm going to talk about Battle Shonen.
Yee.
Before we go into that, I'll let the rest of these guys talk, you know.
The room falls silent.
All right, Mag will be here, as always. What's going on, kids?
Mechanical here. I've got some repairs going on. I'm kind of up and running somewhat.
Yeah, your leg's only halfway functioning.
Yeah, a little glitch.
It's a bummer.
I'm waiting for that update patch to set in.
Yeah. And we have a special guest, because
Mag brought a straggler in.
I did.
I just kind of walked in.
Who are you? What do you do?
Well, my name is Rich. I don't have a cool tag name. Tall and lanky, I guess.
I think that's your tag name. Yeah.
I've got Dragon Ball Z on the brain, so I might throw some of that in there.
All right. So I'm going to start off. I've been leading up this for a long, long time. I'm going to talk about not so much my favorite anime, but definitely my favorite manga of all time. Eiichiro Oda's One Piece. So many years ago, when I was getting into the convention scene, I remember going to the MIT Anime Club and watching this series, and I jumped in midway. I was watching the Arlong part, and it was the final battle, and it was just some of the most intense action I'd ever seen in a shonen anime. It harkened back to, like, the days of DBZ for me, where it was just, like, these ridiculous overpowered attacks, but there was something a lot more grounded to it for me. And that's always been one of the things with One Piece that's always made a cut above other shonen for me. For One Piece, for those who are uninformed, is a tale of Monkey D. Luffy in his quest to find the ultimate treasure to become the King of the Pirates. This treasure is known as the One Piece, and along the way, on his journey to find such a legendary treasure, he meets Motley Crue characters from the pirate hunter Roronoa Zoro, who fights with three swords and is my favorite character in the series, and also one of my favorite characters cosplay. The cook Sanji, who has mastered the martial arts style on his black leg, which allows him to fight with his feet because he believes that his hands are a tool for helping others.
That's
and
awesome.
And cooking because he's a chef. The sniper Usopp, who is a better liar and a better shot and a horrible fighter. And he's also a freaking coward, but he's still awesome. Nami the Navigator, who, she loves the dough. She loves her crew. She loves to navigate also, actually. She's trying to make a map of the world. That's her ambition. The half-human, half-reindeer, Tony Tony Chopper.
That's the one I was
thinking. Yes, who ate the Hito Hito fruit, which gave him the ability to turn into a human-like creature, and gave him human intelligence, which allowed him to become a doctor. And he is now the ship's doctor, and he's damn good at it. The living skeleton Brook, who ate the Yomi Yomi fruit that allowed him to live a second life after he was killed the first time. And he is the musician of the crew. The crew's shipwright, Frankie, who is a cyborg, after being damn near destroyed by an oncoming train, he rebuilt himself from parts that he found laying around. And over the years, he formed his own mafia family in the town of Water 7. Through some rigmaroles in the storyline, he ends up joining the crew because he finds out that they have, like, a lot of similar goals.
Now, did he start off, like, as an enemy?
A lot of these characters do end off at odds with Luffy. But, like, Frankie was, like, the first one I think that was an actual enemy, because when he had his mafia family in the town of Water 7, he robbed Usopp of all the gold that they had because, like, you're pirates. You don't need this money. And he's like, no one's going to miss it. So him and Luffy go at it. Also, one of my favorite female characters is involved in this Water 7 arc, Nika Robin. She's the ship's archaeologist. Her job is basically, like, figuring out any kind of clues to, like, treasures and whatnot, or on their various quests. She's, like, the dark, mysterious character of the crew. And she was kind of an enemy as well, actually, now you mentioned. That goes into one of my favorite parts of the series, like, the whole idea of family. One Piece, it's a lot of it's Luffy's story, but you get to see, like, the hardships that these characters go through. Like, I mentioned in an earlier episode of the podcast, Tony Chopper, when he joins the crew, you find out his backstory about how he was raised and trained to be a doctor by two different doctors.
So you talked about him during anime that makes you cry, yes, right? Yes. Yeah.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you have a lot of stories like that with Nami, who, her adopted mother sacrificed her life so that she and her sister could live on when Arlong, the fishman pirate, took over their village. And Sanji, his mentor, sacrificed his leg so that Sanji could live on and find the legendary ocean of all blue, which is supposed to have the finest ingredients and the finest fish for any chef on the ocean to get their hands on. Zoro, who ended up taking on a third sword with his fighting style because of his childhood friend Kuina, who died because of a tragic accident falling down the stairs, how he saw her as a rival and was planning on having her as a rival for becoming the greatest swordsman in the world. When she died, he inherited her sword, and now that's why he fights with three swords, one in his mouth. And there's so many other stories, and I'm running on fumes, so I can't really go into too much detail. Needless to say, I'm just going to say, if you are on the fence about it, give it a try. I would say that it's a slow burn because
it's a long show.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's like 800 plus now episodes. The manga has reached the 20-year mark, and this is apparently it's just past the halfway point. But from a storytelling aspect, I love Oda's attention to detail. Like, he'll introduce an element in the series that has very little significance when it's first introduced. But later on, you'll be like, oh, that's what that was about.
I see, I love stuff like that. That's like, that's,
yeah, not too many manga artists do that either. Like, a good example, the entire arc of Skypiea, which is the island in the sky. A lot of it was just like going on an adventure, fighting a dude who was living lightning. And it's like an entirely different culture from the rest of the world of One Piece. And various crew members get certain enhancements. And then later on down the road, you're like, oh, this dude has wings like people from the Sky Island. Or this guy's using a tool that was used in Sky Island. Or the ability of Haki, which was later on in the series, which non-Devil Fruit uses the ability to fight people with Devil Fruit powers. Or to fight Logia-powered people. A lot of that harkens back to that arc.
So, it is pirate-based. You've mentioned something about magic fruit and whatnot, but you picked this for your battle shonen anime. It's mostly about
fighting.
It's mostly about these guys fighting their way across the ocean.
All right, we want to talk about some fights. I want to go over a couple of my favorite fights. The Alabasta arc, which is easily one of the most memorable arcs of One Piece. Sanji the Cup went toe-to-toe with this gay ballerina character named Bon Clay, who had a style called Okami Kenpo. And whether in the manga or animated, it was just one of the best-looking fights ever. It was just like non-stop kicking, like, I haven't seen kicks that solid since back when I actually studied Taekwondo. It's Oda's, like, just dedication to getting, like, those angles to make such a compelling fight. Luffy's fight in the Enies Lobby's arc, which was a huge turning point for the series. This is where Luffy might learn a new ability called Gear Second, which allows him to basically vulcanize his rubber abilities. He's going, like, faster than sound, and, like, his attacks almost look like projectiles for a split second. But he makes it clear that, no, this is just me moving faster. And he's fighting to save Nico Robin, who is, at this point, has revealed that she holds the secret to one of the ultimate weapons in the world of One Piece. She turned herself into the world government with this knowledge so to protect her crew. Luffy's like, no, you don't get to make that call. You join my crew. You're my family. When he finally goes toe-to-toe with the final boss, Rob Lucci, it is like balls to the wall. And not only does he use Gear Second, he creates Gear Third, which basically turns his inflation aspect of his ability into living bone. So when he inflates his arm, it's not just rubber. It's like his entire mass is hard enough to smash everything in the general vicinity. Later on, in the second half of the series, he learns to control it, but he creates Gear Fourth, which allows him to use the ability of Haki, which, as I stated earlier, gives people, like, stronger observation. They can practically see through walls. They can sense life forces. They can create, like, an outer coat of armor that can, like, deflect elemental attacks, that can deflect blades. And if you're really good at Haki, you have what's known as the Color of the King, or the Conqueror, depending on your translation, which can subdue weak, lesser opponents into, like, a seizure. And Luffy's one of those rare types because, you know, he's the main character.
Yeah.
There was a translation that tried to use the word will, which is more or less a rough translation of the term Haki.
Okay.
Haki, or spirit.
Yeah. No, I gotcha.
Yeah. So, Luffy learns to use the armament aspect of it to create Gear Fourth, which comes with two forms. And both these two forms of Gear Fourth allow him stronger attacks, a more muscular form, but One Piece has a special place in my heart for a reason.
I'm going to talk about My Hero Academia, because that is absolutely a shonen battle anime, but it's new and it's currently popular.
And it's second to One Piece.
Fresh.
He's fresh. Yeah, so My Hero Academia is about a world where pretty much everyone is born with superpowers. They're called quirks. And it's just what it is. I mean, think of it as if you've ever read any X-Men and talk, you know, people talk about the evolution, how the mutants are in fact the future. This is that future. Everyone has a power. It is in fact super weird for you not to have a power. In this world, there are superheroes and supervillains, because that's what we do with superpowers.
Yes.
So, of course, there have to be special programs, special schooling, and then government certification and whatnot to become a hero. So, this anime follows the training of a class of aspiring young heroes who are entering into basically a specialized high school. They're entering into a trade school specifically for hero work. And it specifically follows a character, Midoriya, who is born with no quirk. And now Midoriya is a superpower nerd. He is that stereotype where, in a conversation, he'll pull out stat cards.
Yes.
He keeps a detailed notebook with all of his own notes, does all kinds of research. He's a superhero otaku. So it is devastating to him that he doesn't have a power. And so he goes throughout, you know, elementary school, middle school, quirkless, being made fun of, being told, basically, you're a useless drain on society. What can you possibly do? You sure as hell can't be a hero. So Deku's, you know, Midoriya's out in the world and doing his pathetic nerd thing when he comes across his hero. In a world of heroes, this is the number one hero, his idol.
Chris Sabat. All Might.
All Might. He meets All Might, and All Might watches him try to save Bakugo, who has found himself basically being used as a shield by a supervillain. And Bakugo does have powers. He has, like, explosion powers, which is reflective of his explosive personality. He is very angry at the world. He is angry about everything. It's honestly, like, if you met this guy in real life, he would be awful. He's not a great character, but I love him because it's an anime and I'm allowed to love fictional terrible characters. So Bakugo's, he's the most powerful kid in their middle school, and he's being used as essentially a human shield by this villain. Yeah, by a goopy villain. Clayface. Anime Clayface. By a goopy villain. And All Might comes in to save the day. But before he can get there, Midoriya's powerless little shrimp is doing everything he can to save, honestly, his bully. And All Might sees this and finds him, rescues Bakugo and rescues Midoriya. And he finds, later on, he has a heart-to-heart, a one-on-one with Midoriya and says, you know, believe it or not, I wasn't born with a quirk either. What?
Nerd.
Yes. I have a power called One for All that is passed down from hero to hero. And with each generation, it gets stronger. I have not picked anyone yet to pass this on. I have never met anyone that I would want to burden with this responsibility, but you have the true heart and soul of a hero, and I want you to carry on my legacy. So he starts training him and eventually has him eat a piece of his hair, which is how you pass on the the power.
And suddenly I'm having Family Guy flashbacks.
Yeah, no, it's a super weird moment. I'm not gonna lie. It's a super weird moment. He's basically like, you have to eat a part of me. And you're like, yeah, it's real weird. But anyways, Deku inherits this power and goes off to school with the other heroes or the other aspiring heroes, and it's about his classmates and they're battling and learning about themselves and how to best use their powers. And it's great. It's a lot of fun. It's a battle shonen anime. It is all around these people basically training to fight and better themselves. And then all the crazy shenanigans that are happening around them in the greater superhero world that they keep getting sucked into these adult fights. And like, I don't want to go into too much detail, but it's a phenomenal show. I absolutely love it. The characters are what make the show. Absolutely. Because you have this aspect of what you were saying of the found family. And all these people are technically competing against each other. Hero licensures are not easy to come by, and they only give out so many every year.
It's like a sports scholarship. In this
it is. It's very much. It's like you're all competing for the same job, and there's only 5 positions available. But it's all these kids coming together and, you know, figuring out themselves, their place in the world, and more excitingly, how their powers work within that, yes, this crazy, crazy world that they found themselves in.
One thing about the series I find really interesting is a lot of the ideologies going on in it. The League of Villains, for example. Like, on paper, it sounds lame, but
They're great, because they come out of, so the League of Villains,
well, the name sounds lame.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, the name sounds kind of lame, but it's actually, they actually chose that name as a deconstruction of the idea of a hero.
Yeah.
there's no League of Heroes for a reason, because like it doesn't, it wouldn't strike fear into the hearts of these villains. Mm-hmm. This is basically, and I'm going to get his name wrong, the hand guy.
I have a character list pulled up.
Shigaraki.
Yes, that one. Thank you.
Shigaraki. This is all his pet project. And this is his way of basically giving Hero Society the finger. Because he hates, like, we still don't know enough about him to know why he hates Hero Society so much yet.
Yeah, there's something about him. Hero done him dirty at some point in his life, and we don't really know exactly what his issue is, but he's a very creepy villain.
He didn't invite me to his birthday party.
He's a really creepy villain, and we get a quick flashback for him where you see him as like a child on the street, and basically the lead villain who is the opposite of All Might. There is all for one. There is one for all, which is All Might's thing that he passes down. There is also the polar opposite, All for One, who's a supervillain that you can pass down your powers to.
Yes.
So All for One picks up Shigaraki, and Shigaraki's already been abandoned by society, and the society that really worships heroes. And heroes, they have agencies that they work for, but it's more like, they're more like job agencies. They're more like working on a police force kind of thing.
Civil service.
It's a civil service kind of thing, rather than like, it's competitive, but it's not as competitive as, say, the premise for Tiger and Bunny, where they're literally competing for you know, a status. He's the number one hero. There is a ranking system, but it's not indicative of your pay or anything. It's just like...
Or popularity.
This doesn't...
Yeah. Kind of, sort of, but not as much.
It is solely indicative of your popularity.
I have to bring up this meme that crosses my mind every time I think about My Hero Academia's society.
Mm-hmm.
It is this meme right here. I'm going to read it out loud in a second.
It's a picture of Rudolph.
Like the old...
Deviations from the norm will be punished unless exploitable.
Yes,
that is
exactly.
That is this hero society in a nutshell.
It is.
It's like, we have a use for you freaks, so that's why we're not locking you in cages.
I mean, kind of. It probably started out that way.
Yeah.
But the way that it's not having a power is what makes you a freak.
Yeah.
Now, in this world, everyone has powers, so that doesn't quite translate. It's I recognize the point, and I think that it's something that like our society works in, and a lot of anime work in, but it's not really how it works within this anime, because you're the freak if you don't have a power. It's a real good series. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it.
All right, so Dragon Ball Z. Now I know
A plus intro.
Yeah. So let's see, because Dragon Ball was definitely more adventure and everything. And sadly, I am yet to watch Dragon Ball.
Get out!
That's the thing.
I actually didn't know this about you.
No, this is... I just haven't had a source to be able to binge it.
Like, I haven't watched Dragon Ball.
I've seen Dragon Ball. Don't get me wrong. It was on TV, but I couldn't watch it episode to episode and everything.
Okay.
Like that. But I knew enough of it, so when I went into Dragon Ball Z, I remember when I first started watching Dragon Ball Z, I was young and everything. It was on TV. I think it was actually sometime during the Frieza saga when I first saw it. I was like, what is this? Like, I have no idea.
What's happening?
And, you know, and that's what I feel where a lot of people, like, it's a hit or miss for people who are fans of it or not fans. Because they're like, they would watch it week to week. And I know people complain about all the yelling that happens, like the screaming for like a whole episode and whatnot. But a lot of people don't realize
it was a product of its time.
Yeah, it was a product like when you really watch them power up, because this was animated what, like early 80s?
No,
like maybe like
Z was mid 80s.
90s, late 80s?
Yeah, something like that. Because we didn't get into like 91, 92 or something like that over here.
Yeah.
But I know it was going, but the animation of just like, because I grew up on the real Ghostbusters. And like, yes. So they would send the animation cells all over to, you know, overseas to get those animated and everything like that. And the animation was always off. You'd see a lot of repeat and stuff like that. Like, wrong mouths would move, stuff like that. But the Z's attention to detail on everything. So like, when they're powering up, it's like, yeah, it lasts a good while. But you see every little pebble flying up from the on the just the art style of it. It's just like its own layer of entertainment.
They were showing off.
Yeah.
All of that was like a testament to Akira Toriyama's like manga
work.
Yeah. Oh,
God.
If you like anyone listening to this, do yourself a favor and just like really look, like don't just read the manga. Look at the line where look at every single detail, like usage of like the of each panel. It is some of the best usage of space, and as an artist myself, it's something that I aspire to, like getting every inch I can in a picture.
Yep.
And there aren't many mangaka that go to the lengths that Toriyama did. Certainly not the guy that does the super manga.
Yeah, no. That's the thing. I'm not really too far into super. The only things of quote unquote of super I have seen are like the two newer movies, the Resurrection F and the Battle of the Gods. Which were very entertaining for me because it was pretty much
more
just,
Z.
Yeah, exactly. It was more Z. Yeah. But no, going back to Z, like, because you know, like I said, you got when it comes to the art style and everything, like, they boast like at first they try to keep track of how powerful they are with the scouters and everything like that. It's like, oh my god, his power level is this, his power level is that, and everything like that. So like when the numbers actually mattered, it's like, oh my god, he's really strong, but. Again, going to just the amount of time and effort they showed, like as they're powering up, like cliffs crumbling, the world, like where you can see it, how far from the Earth on, like in space and stuff like that, just showing you how powerful these people are actually getting and everything like that. And honestly, when it comes to like the fights and everything, because that's what this show was. Because like I said, Dragon Ball was much more adventure and everything like that. Like especially when Goku first uses his Kamehameha for the first time, like, because it took Roshi years to, but, and he could do it instantly and punches the side of the car and, like, dents it almost in half. It doesn't do any destruction to it, but it's just like, excuse me, what?
Tell that to the wheel.
I mean, it didn't disintegrate, like, Cell, for example. No, but just show, like, Goku as a character as well. It's like, and I love how they, like, they're just like, oh, yeah, by the way, you're an alien. And it's like, it's just like, oh, shit.
Okay,
sure. And, like, we're here now.
Like, because the whole, like, with Piccolo and everything, that, this is me getting, segueing into the characters now. Mm-hmm. Like I said, art style is one thing. Now the characters, it's just like, it's because One Piece, like, has so many different characters. Like, as you were talking about One Piece. Like, that's what I'm loving about it so far. It's like, I'm hearing how every character, like, I can pair up to a character in Dragon Ball Z, but the details are different enough.
Yes.
Where it's not like a copy. So it's like, oh man, if anything, it's just reminding me of Dragon Ball Z, but it's making me want to watch it as a whole separate thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And just like,
there's a lot of parallel between the series because Oda did work closely with Toriyama in his early years as a manga artist. So they're like, so, and they actually have like a really good working relationship now where they've done a couple of crossover manga.
What was it? When it comes to Z again, because we're still on the topic. I know going back, I know people who watch it one time through, like me, when I binged it, like people, like I've, again, more complaints about, you know, filler and them driving the cars and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, filler, I could see if you're watching it week to week, you wanted to see the next big thing to happen.
Yeah.
But when you're just binging it without, you know, commercial interruptions or anything like that, the filler was very entertaining for me. Mm-hmm. I loved every bit of the thing.
It was nowhere near as bad as some modern shonen either.
Yeah, no, but if you want to just go back and get the nitty gritty of the fights and everything. You're feeling the mood for the fights, but watching the series, Kai. That's where, like, Dragon Ball Z Kai came in. I love Kai as well. Just I didn't realize it was a censored and uncensored version of it. Because, I was watching, I was watching it on what was it, Adult Swim or something? Yeah. No, it was just it was just. It wasn't even Adult Swim at the time. Kai's been
premiering on the CW, like, morning cartoons.
That's what it was. So it's like, because when I first watched it, it was only, like, 4 or 5 episodes in, and Goku was already on King Kai's planet. Yeah. It was like, jeez. But when he first lands there, and he's having trouble standing up, every time he face planted into the ground, he was like, damn it! Damn it! And I'm like, you know, this may, like, because I've always watched it with, like, darn it, and just, damn, I don't know, I was like, darn it just sounds weird, but just finally having them talk like adult human beings in pain, it's just like, this is where it's at. It's like, I love
spice.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
but nothing beats Vegeta flipping
yes.
It's so great.
Oh, yeah, still one of my favorite moments. Yeah. It's just a testament to how much cultural influence Dragon Ball as a franchise has had on anime culture, on geek culture. Even people who don't know anything about anime, you bring up Dragon Ball, it's like, oh, I know what that is. Like,
I power up now.
Yes.
And in some ways, because it's also, so Battle Shonen in America was a big part of, like, what popularized anime in America, but popularized it for children.
Yes.
So,
yes, we were.
yes. But so when you talk about anime, Dragon Ball Z is one of the first things that people think of. And it's not necessarily in a great light because they kind of only pull the negative as, oh, that's for kids and it's repetitive and it's, but it really is. It's a great show. It's a lot of fun. This is another, every single show, with the exception of My Hero Academia, simply because it hasn't been around long enough, but both of the shows we've talked about are very, very long shows.
Yeah.
Yes.
High episode counts, which is another kind of common trope, a common theme within Battle Shonen.
And here comes Mechanical to break the mold.
Yeah!
The series I picked, Soul Eater.
Woo! Oh, that's a great one.
I've only seen a few episodes, but I'm digging it so far.
It's a real good one.
I'm digging it so far.
It's a real good one. It's a lot of fun.
Like, just the premise of it all. Just like, hey, instead of, like, you know, partners or anything, like, I'm your weapon. Like,
yep. That's,
well, Soul Eater follows the Avengers. Oh, I'm actually doing the voice of...
You are doing a voice. What voice are you doing, dear?
I'm doing the voice of Lord Death.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure
it's
Death.
It is. We're an auditory medium, and we need to have these disclaimers. Absolutely. So please, Death, continue.
Very well. I did have to change my mask. My old one used to scare the children. I even open up a school for deaf excuse me.
Let's see how long we can keep up this voice.
Death Weapon Meister Academy. I mean, I need to have death sites to hunt down the Kishin souls.
What are Kishin souls?
Kishin souls are human souls that have been corrupted by evil.
Oh no.
And as they grow, they consume human souls and spread madness about the world. But through the DWMA, I train new students to become prospectful death sites.
Prospective?
I'm using the wrong word here. Where's my internal thesaurus? Failing right now.
Can you do the voice or I could have a...
Yeah, I know. You see?
Back to normal voice. We're going to trade out funny voices for vocabulary.
So, the Grim Reaper trains new students to become... death sites, those that can actually turn into weapons, and death site meisters, those that wield it with expert care. But in order to become a death site, they need to devour 99 Kishin souls and one witch soul. Any deviation from that, they'll be brought back to square one.
Oh,
that damn sexy witch.
The premise of the show is episode one.
Episode one. We have Maka and Soul. They're hunting down a Kishin.
I think they're hunting down their witch soul. Like, they're about to finish up.
Oh, yes. And,
that's what he was saying. Damn that sexy witch.
All over the place.
Is, so, yes, soul is consumed all 99 Kenshin, yep. And he is about to
catch that
become
one
pro.
Cat witch soul. And they have, let's see, it takes 4 days, like 3 days of failure. A bit of nose bleeding on arousal, on soul part.
Yep.
Oh, you know, boy. You just don't know what to expect when you bust into a bathroom.
Yeah.
But on the fourth day, they have the all-out battle, well animated. And
yes.
By a bit of surprise, Soul gets the last attack on Blair the Witch.
Ah! Yep.
And devours her soul, but is a huge surge of power, but nothing. He finds out that she was just a magical cat.
She's not a witch!
Not a witch!
She's not a witch!
Looks like a witch!
The hat was a bait and switch.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. So we get to go back to school. Mm-hmm. Start all over.
A bait and witch, you might call it.
I'm sorry.
Bad taste in my mouth.
Oh, man. Victor Frankenstein is in that, isn't he?
Yes, he is. So...
Yes.
Yes.
I was thinking about it. I'm like, is that that series?
Dr. Frank and Stein.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Is one of the teachers at the DWMA. He trains them how to use synchronizing cooperative attacks. So, like, if they're out of sync, they're not going to be,
they're not going
to be effective. Yeah.
That's one dull sight.
I haven't seen much of the show, but he's definitely one of my favorite characters that I've been introduced so far. His physique, he looks very non-threatening at first glance, but then he doesn't look like as good of a fighter as he ends up being.
Okay,
yeah, and all of a sudden, boom, and then it's just like, yeah, oh my god, they're not going to win this.
Yes.
I remember that.
And it's just like...
He's all about the counters at first.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
With ease.
All right, so let's let Mechanical talk. What is the show about? Is there just these two characters?
There's also the ninja Black Star. He's very Naruto-ish, minus... Well, he's not as smart as Naruto.
Ouch.
For sure.
And that's kind of saying something. Naruto's not the brightest bulb in the crayon box.
And his death weapon, Tsubaki, who's also a ninja, but she can turn into a bunch of, like, ninja weapon tools.
Eat.
And there's also Death the Kid, which is the Grave Reaper's son.
My favorite character.
OCD about...
Symmetry. The number 8 is the perfect number. He wields two handguns and
Patty
it
and
drives
Thompson.
Him fucking bananas that when they're people, one is tall and one is short. No, but Death the Kid is a lot of fun because he is all powerful. He is the son of death, but he is constantly stymied by his own need for... Yeah, his own OCD. Honestly, it is, like, clinically real bad OCD.
He would have aced that test if only he could write down his name.
That was actually my first episode that I watched.
I haven't seen that in so long. I remember starting to binge it. I forget why I stopped and just didn't get back to it. It's like something else popped up at the time or something. I forget. But this is like I didn't hate it. I was very much enjoying it and just fell off the train.
So one of my favorite characters / like arcs in this is Krona.
Yep.
I love Krona. Krona is a non-binary character, kind of before like a lot of the gender rights started coming into the main scene. Non-binary character. With a crazy abusive mother, Medusa, who we get to fight.
That's a very abusive mother name, I'd say.
Go back in the closet.
Oh my god, oh my god. I love... Krona is this their big bad for a while of they cannot get past this person. They are just perfect. And then there's tragic past, which I'm a sucker for, and, I love Krona's character, I love their arc, I love the way that they are animated, I love their weird power, like, weapon that they have. It's incredible.
So is this one, is this like a, like, length of this anime?
The length of this anime is roughly, 30 episodes?
Yeah. See, it's not that long, but it does have a good arc.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, better to jump the train than jump the shark.
So, anything else you want to add for the, add for Soul Eater?
Well, the King of the Kishin, the Asura, oh, the one episode when he gets awakened, that was some creepiness there. A lot of hallucinating with the characters.
The Kishin was really terrifying, and it had very much a, like, mummy-slash-spiderweb vibe going on. I don't know, something about that really, really stuck with me.
Like, he was, like, entombed within his own flesh, like an egg, like a mummy egg.
Yes, very creepy, very
creepy. Those are the words I live for. That is like that. You just don't think you're going to hear today. A mummy egg. Like, oh,
so natural.
Fleshy, spidery mummy egg.
That sounds glorious. Oh,
it's awful and it's great. Oh, it makes me. Spooky time. Oh my god! Yeah, no. The Kishin is prime spooky time.
Stick with the subs. It's, in my opinion, funnier in Japanese.
That's fair. I actually agree with that. The dub is okay, but it's not great. And a lot of the translations definitely get, a lot of the wording gets a little funny.
See, now, here's my main problem. I have to watch it dubbed. Like, especially animes. Like, I have to, because they're so visual, there's so much to look at, so much greatness to look at. It's like, if I want to read, I'll read a book. And it's like, it just pulls me too far out. And like, that's just me, though.
Here's my point, the point that sticks with me most in that one. I forget the werewolf's name that can do ice magic.
But that sounds awesome.
But he's not good at it, though. So like, in like the English dub, he's like, oh, crap, I messed up again. But in the Japanese dubbing, in English, he's like, goddamn bullshit.
That's fair.
That's definitely like a good selling point for me, because I've been in the weeb game for a while, and I've just gotten to a point now where it's like I'll watch the sub for a while, and then I'll randomly watch a dubbed episode. And I'm just like, they missed the entire point of that joke, didn't they?
I've definitely seen that, but trying to think, because I know there has been the opposite at sometimes too. It's like the English dub is like, that is way more funny, like having it that way. I can't think of an example of one right now. I just know
Space Dandy, Hattalia.
See, you guys got that example. Oh man,
they were there to fill in the gaps.
There's a lot of them up here.
All right. Well, our runtime is running on, so let's blast through some of these
honorable mentions.
All right,
this is another battle shonen that I could gush on for hours about, but I'm gonna have to keep it short and sweet. Hunter x Hunter.
Yes.
Okay,
that's
so
a great one. What's it about?
Okay, it is about Gun Freaks on a journey to become a licensed hunter, like his father, Jane Freaks, who is one of the worst anime dads of all time.
What's a hunter? Monster hunter? Bounty hunter?
Okay, I was guessing what you meant. Hunters are essentially adventurers. They are, yes, they go out and they go out on quests. You can be a hunter of just about anything. You can be a bounty hunter. You can become like a weapon hunter.
Oh.
You can be a music hunter. But in order to become any kind of hunter, you have to have a license. And every year they have an exam, and no two tests are the same. So this in this year is the year that Gun decides to become a hunter. He passes it. He makes his friends. There's no real central plot to describe. It is very much a character piece. And it, in many ways, is a deconstruction of shonen. Not just battle shonen, but shonen in general.
Mm.
Because there are moments where you're in a normal shonen series where you would think, oh shit, this is the part where everything changes. Like, I did not see that coming! You want a good example of that deconstruction? Make it like watch or read the Chimera Ant arc. You're gonna be like, what the fuck? This is not the same series I started on. And I can't say too much more without spoiling it. Except I will say that Nin is one of the most fascinating fighting styles out of any battle shonen ever. It is, you want a balanced fighting style, that is it. But that is my honorable mention.
Go on. Passing the ball.
Yes, passing the ball.
Yu Yu Hakusho!
Hunter Hunter's older brother.
Yeah. Yu Yu Hakusho is a great anime. That's a lot of fun. It is about the protagonist, Yusuke Urameshi, who is hit by a car while trying to save a child and dies. He's kind of a punk. He's been known as gang member, is kind of the strongest, like, delinquent out there. So he's already a fighter. He dies doing something altruistic, and this catches the eye of one of the, like, kings of the underworld, and he is given permission to go back to his body and become, like, a soul fighter. It's found out he has a really, really strong aura, and he's able to shoot spirit bombs out of his fists, and he tracks down spirit criminals, and he battles spirit bad guys.
It's so fun.
It's very fun.
See, real quick, hopping back to my growing up cartoon, The Real Ghostbusters, what really connected this one with me is they have all the same sound effects from the Ghostbusters in this.
They do.
And the string of love.
God damn it.
That is a really good impression.
God damn it, Kuwabara.
Kuwabara. You're a meshy.
Oh, you're a meshy.
You're a meshy. My spirit story. Oh, God.
We actually very seriously considered for a while doing a Kuwabara cosplay for this one.
So,
yes, that would have been awesome.
I love Kuwabara, man.
He's definitely one of the more interesting characters in the series.
Well, yeah, Kuwabara is basically Yusuke's, like, main rival in the middle school gang world. And then
besties.
Yeah, they become besties, and basically because Kuwabara starts... also has a very strong spirit aura, so he can start sensing Yusuke while he's still a ghost, and he kind of gets drawn into this adventure. But Yusuke's also like, what is happening? Because Kuwabara is wrecked when Yusuke dies. He's so upset because he's like, I never had a chance to beat you!
Yep.
Why, you're a machine.
Yeah.
He's the very, very Vegeta. Same voice actor.
He is. He's very Vegeta.
He's very Vegeta.
He's very Vegeta.
It's that same thing. No, I would say, what's his name?
Hiei.
He's definitely, I feel like, Vegeta's kind of split in this one, personality-wise, because he's definitely another Vegeta type.
Just two Vegetas for the price of one.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And then you have your ultimate Bishi. The ultimate Bishi. He is a fox spirit with long, flowing red hair.
See, when I brought up how many tournaments...
I knew you were thinking of this.
It is
non-stop tournaments.
The first half, like the first season, whatnot, with the beasts and the tower and everything like that. Just like that was just so amazing, and then it just turned into a tournament fest, which is not bad. It's still interesting.
The tournament
went on
for a long time.
Yeah,
you stopped watching after the end of the tournament, but it goes on. There's more.
The biggest scariest, like the big baddie so far. I haven't seen that fight yet. I have no idea how that goes.
Oh, we should fix that.
I have no idea.
But
what
no,
happens.
After the tournament fight, the show does continue, and there's more stuff.
What I hear. Exactly. But
the fights in this series are interesting too, because like. They're not necessarily about who has the biggest ki blast. It's more about what they're fighting for a lot of times.
Yeah.
Because
spirit power is also very directly linked to, like, willpower and soul power.
Yeah, no,
and it's very interesting watching these people, watching Urameshi specifically sort of balance physical martial arts with the spiritual side of figuring out how to meld the two. And you see all these different people, both humans and demons and blah, 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 coming at this from very different ways. And it's really neat.
Yeah, no,
it's really neat watching the different fighting styles and the different manifestations of the spiritual energy.
When you say different, I mean, and you really mean that, because every fight, and there's a lot of them in this, I want to say, like, from memory, are, all of them are unique
mm-hmm.
in their own shape or form.
Yes.
And it's just like, it's amazing how many fights that they have in
area
and none are very, like,
fights.
Like, they, like, the main characters still use their same moves and everything like that, but, like, the enemies of the fight just brings a whole new thing to counter it in some way, and it's just like, you don't even see it coming. Like, the that one demon who's, like, the second he gets hit with the attack, he's now invulnerable to it. Awesome.
Yes.
Love that. Ah, anyway.
I was going to say, though, like, going back to the whole, like, ideology aspect of the fights, I'll try not to drone too much on this, but, like, the final arc, the Demon World Tournament, that's where you see a lot of that grade coming in. You kind of see characters kind of looking at, like, side-eyeing Yusuke a bit with, like, in the human world, it's like, did you just tell those demons that it was okay, to eat bad humans compared them to steak? Like, maybe? Like, yeah. Get out of my house.
Yeah.
Don't ever come back. If I see you again, I kill you. And
again.
It's little moments like that that kind of make it so, like, make it such a paramount shonen series.
Highly recommended. Definitely good honorable mention.
Wow. Scratching the bottom of the barrel. Thinking, like,
come on, Brent, think!
Well, I have a guilty pleasure.
Okay.
A real quick one. Guilty
sure.
pleasure. Sword Art Online.
Okay.
All right.
Love. I know every person I talk to about it. Like, not necessarily. You're the one who showed me it. But but I just went and I watched it at least four times, straight on through, and I sob every single time. I don't know what it is about it.
Technically, I think that qualifies as a battle shonen. That's
yeah,
not
does.
Something I
oh,
would
yeah,
think
no,
to,
the,
but yeah.
The, No,
it definitely
the,
is.
The especially the,
yeah,
the,
it does.
The dungeon battles definitely for it's just like
mm-hmm.
just the whole
mm-hmm.
oh man, because like they have like it's them having to move floor
yeah.
to floor, like pushing them to fight, especially when that one group gets thrown in and he when first reveals that he's the only character with the dual wield ability and he's just the internal have to go fast. It's so powerful and just like how it's, it just makes you just want to just
This coming from a gamer, because the premise of this show is that basically virtual reality is a thing and this is the ultimate VR experience, and so everybody who goes into this game that's kind of set as like a Middle Earth dungeon crawler kind of setting basically gets trapped in there. They cannot get out, they cannot take their headsets off, and when they die in the game, you die in real life.
Dot hack.
Matrix has
yes,
Neo.
It is. It is.
See, that,
yeah.
That's why every time I bring up Sword Art Online, everybody, this is the first thing they go, oh, that's just dot hack.
It's just dot hack rehash.
Like, oh, I have
yes,
Dot hack.
But...
Oh,
that's
I
played the,
one
the
I was,
game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, but...
But yeah, no, that's the thing, and so
give
you have...
A chance.
You have these people living their whole, like, living their lives in this virtual reality system because they cannot get out until someone beats the game. And that's what the desperation behind the fights is.
Yep.
Is people are reticent to fight because if you die in the game, you die in real life. But nobody can leave the game until somebody beats the game.
Mm-hmm. Man, it's good.
There's a lot of bit roll behind the series, too. Like, some of it's justified, some of it isn't. I mean, if you like it, there's nothing wrong with it. Don't let anyone rain your parade.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about it. I love it.
I'm thinking of like a battle shonen right now, but right now what comes to mind is Spriggan, and that's a bit too dark.
All we do.
Yeah, you got the battle, the shonen.
Would Hellsing? Would Hellsing Ultimate? Be
no,
that's seinen.
Absolutely not. Yeah. That's way too dark to be a shonen.
I remember one of our missing members here
still
tonight, Megatron. It's not exactly a read up for him, but he wanted to talk about Fist of the North Star.
That's
oh,
right.
Yeah.
Yes,
that's right.
That definitely were like big Dragon Ball Z vibes there, but
that's Dragon Ball's older brother.
Yeah, oh, that's pre DBZ.
Yes, like I remember the first time watching it and just watching Ken just walking down, and all of a sudden this building just falls and lands on his head, and he doesn't move. It just crumbles around him. It's like, what is that? I love this.
That is Hokuto Shinken. All right. Well, I think we will have to let Megatron have that gushing session another time, though. Mm-hmm. Battle Shonen. Without it, I don't think there would be a U.S. anime industry.
Honestly, let's be real.
Yeah.
Battle Shonen and, Monster Fighters.
Oh, absolutely. Oh. Those two genres.
And there's a lot of crossover between them. Like, honestly, Digimon could be considered both.
Yeah.
The most obvious one, yes. Right in front of my face.
Yeah, no. Like, Digimon and, Yu-Gi-Oh! And Beyblade and stuff. Those all technically qualify as battle shonen. But because of their heavy merchandising aspect of it, Pokemon, they tend to be taken out of that category as their own separate battle monsters thing. But there's the battle monsters and the battle shonen came in at about the same time and were both very popular because they're kind of just different premises for the same thing.
Yeah.
And no, honestly, you're absolutely right. There wouldn't be an anime industry, or it would be a very different anime industry. Yeah. The anime industry as we know it in America would not be.
It also makes for some great humor in and of itself as well. But on that note, the birthday boy, Byron D Zero, saying good night, everyone. Follow us on social media. We're all over the place. Things are going okay. Give us support. Like us on iTunes.
And tune in next time on the next exciting episode of Dragon Ball... Oh, wrong thing.
Of Weave Trash Can.
Weave Trash Can Z.
Maggleby signing out. Peace, y'all.
Thanks, guys.
Mechanical here saying, be kind, rewind, recycle, reuse, and I just messed up my saying. Goodbye.
Vaya con Dios, ya matana.